Farhan, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm good, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing very well. The Vancouver Canucks.
Yuck.
I don't believe they're tanking by any stretch. They're just not very good. They've lost eight in a row. They are right in the battle now for the best chance to win the lottery. Do you think they finish 30th in the NHL?
I do. They are clearly the worst team in the National Hockey League right now, and it's not talent combined with a lot of injuries, and then typically teams at the bottom of the standings at this time of year go through that with the injury thing, and that contributes to it, but that certainly isn't the primary reason for the Canucks being as bad as they are. I do think they finished 30th. I don't think they're going to win the lottery just because, I think they're the worst team in the league right now, and the Leafs are playing better, so I don't see the Canucks spinning their way out or climbing their way out of this at this point.
Do you see them improving next season, or is this the start of them being near the bottom of the standings for a few seasons?
I think they'll improve, and I do think the injuries alone will kind of get them to a point of respectability. I don't think they're going to turn into the 2011 Canucks in a year, but there have been a few positives for the team this year. There's been a couple of fines. Sven Berchi's been very good for them. Since being acquired from Calgary, but certainly the second half of this season. Ben Hutton's been a real good addition for them on the blue line. There's a couple of players that have had strong second halves that lead you to believe they can take another step next year. Bo Horvat and Jake Virtanen are two guys that come to mind. Nikita Tramkin, who they've just brought in from Russia, has been better than anybody expected. So I think there's going to be some marginal improvement next year, and they'll kind of trend in that direction, but they're certainly not going to be a contending team anytime soon.
So where do they go from here in management, do you think? What is priority number one for this team to improve? Is it the back end? Do they need some scores to fill in for the Sedins? Like, to me, that would seem the obvious one, but maybe it's a defense. You watch the team closer. What is it?
I think the defense has been awful this year. It really has. From top to bottom, I think some of the better players have been overvalued. I don't believe that Alex Edler's a player that people is as good as some people like to believe. Certainly a guy that's got a huge skill set but refuses to take games over. There's guys like Dan Hamhuis, who played better when he came out of his injury this year than he has in the last couple of years, but has then kind of tailed off since. Lucas Biza, who signed a hefty, not hefty from an elite defenseman standpoint, but certainly a strong contract that is going to tie him to this team for a while and hasn't necessarily lived up to it. There's guys like that on the back end. Matt Bartkowski's been very poor for this team. So I think that's probably been the biggest problem area for them, because they just can't execute a breakout pass and get the puck up ice, and consequently they just don't have any puck possession, and that was what this team was known for. But at the end of the day also, they just can't score. And if you're of the opinion that, scoring starts with your back end and an ability to transition the puck up ice, I think that's a big reason for that. But they also don't have a high number of consistent scores. The Sedin line has been very good at times this year, kind of average in the second half of the year when Yannick Hansen got hurt. Berchi's been good, but hasn't had anyone to get him the puck on a consistent basis. So, they're two top six forwards away from being a reasonable NHL offense, but the defense has got to get significantly better. And the goaltending's been good. They've just been hung out to dry over and over from a goal support standpoint for much of the year.
Farhan Lalji joins us from TSN in Vancouver. Farhan, Radim Verbata, is he good as gone?
Oh, absolutely. There's no way that they would bring him back at this point. I'm curious to see where he winds up going, because there was virtually no interest in him at the trade deadline. I think they were trying to package him with other players, but in terms of, a one-for-one, asset-for-asset deal, there was nothing coming back to this team for Radim Verbata. So, and it's weird how that went down, because he scored 31 goals a year ago, and then this year they basically said, you're not playing with the Twins, and they didn't really have anyone that was a proven setup guy to play with him. Brandon Sutter maybe, but, hadn't really proven himself as a top six forward. He gets hurt, now there's nobody, and he doesn't score. He doesn't produce offensively at all, so... I could totally see Radim Verbata move along on a one-year contract and try to resurrect the last couple of years of his career.
why, after a 31-goal season, when they didn't have an obvious replacement, would they take him off of the Sedin line?
Great question. One that not many people have been able to answer. I think they believe that they were trying to bring some younger guys up into that role and develop some offensive confidence and depth, and they felt that Verbata could anchor a second line, and if they had Sutter. But once Sutter went down, I don't see why they didn't instantly elevate Verbata. And in fairness, a year ago, much of his offensive production came on the power play, playing with the Twins, and that's been kind of hit and miss in terms of how much they've done that as well. So between that and some injuries, it just hasn't gone well, and that was certainly one of the mysteries, because if that was the case, that they weren't going to play him with the Twins, they should have traded him in the offseason when his value was so high and he only had a year left on his deal. It would have made complete sense to have done that. Instead, they completely depreciated the asset, and they got nothing out of it other than a $5 million black hole for the year.
Yeah, that decision just so strange to me from the outside. I could see if maybe we have a young guy who he thinks ready and he can fill in, then great, I get it. But they didn't really have a plan in place. So my next question, Farhan, we had heard rumblings earlier that, management ownership wasn't necessarily on the same page. Do you see any management or coaching changes in the offseason for Vancouver?
I don't. As far as management, that's not going anywhere for at least another year. As far as coaching is concerned, I think it would be grossly unfair to Willie Desjardins for them to move him along at this stage, given what they saddled him with at the start of the year, because even though they said all the right things to everybody about how we still are doing the soft rebuild and expect to make the playoffs and be a 100-point team, we still want you to get younger. And then when he's got three rookies on his opening day lineup, and look, those guys haven't necessarily been the problem. Jared McCann, from a size and strength standpoint, clearly wasn't ready for the NHL over an 82-game season, but that wasn't necessarily the issue. I think a lot of other guys underperformed. That said, you can't saddle a coach with that type of lineup and then all of a sudden fire him and throw him under the bus. So I know they made some comments a couple weeks ago that he would definitely be back, but the flip side of it is this team is like they've given up. They have absolutely given up. And how much of that do you hang on the head coach? Because so many of the veterans have also been underperforming. The Canucks will tell you that they probably punched above their weight class a year ago and got into the playoffs, and that has to be factored in. But in the end, I just don't see them making a trade. Making a firing.
One quick one. I know you cover the BC Lions very well. What are the expectations for the Lions heading into this season with Wally Bono returning in the dual role?
I think they're expecting significant improvement because the players were not happy with Jeff Tedford at all. I spoke to a veteran all-star player earlier today and, just kind of reiterated a number of the stories that came out at the end of last year. And, Jeff did not have a lot of fans in that room. And when it goes bad, some of the coaching methods go south in a real hurry. So I think that they believe that with Wally there, the veterans are going to have a little more input and they're going to get treated like men as opposed to college kids, and it'll work out better from that standpoint. They also really, really, to a man as a roster, have a belief in John Jennings. So they think they're going to get better from that standpoint, and they've probably got a few more dynamic pieces in the receiving puzzle that will help them going forward. So do I think the Lions are going to take a step? I do. Do I think they're going to contend? I don't.
Quickly going back to the Canucks before I let you go, Farhan. With Ryan Miller entering the final year of his contract next year, do you think he's somebody that is looking to be dealt? Would he be dealt either in the offseason or early on next season?
I don't know. Look, here's the thing. His contract, the no-trade clause is gone after 2 years, right? So, and Benning said that he got a trade offer for Ryan Miller a year ago and decided to go in a different direction and keep him. But you would think that at this stage of his career, the last thing Ryan Miller wants to do is be a part of a rebuild. But, there's other factors for Ryan Miller as well in terms of he's got a new young son, his wife lives in Los Angeles, he wants to be closer to the family and things like that. So, does Ryan Miller go to play for Philadelphia next year to finish out his contract? I just don't see it happening. And I don't see any of the Southern California teams or any of the three California teams wanting to bring him in. So I don't think there's a market in the places that he wants to go. So I just don't think there's an easy answer there. It doesn't fit having a $6 million goaltender on a roster that's so far from being competitive. But at the same time, I don't know that he's necessarily dying to make a move. But the power shifts to the Canucks because the no-trade clause is gone after this season.
And this just broke, Farhan. I'm sure you've been on the case about the 32 pairs of Whitecaps cleats that have gone missing in Vancouver. I know it's a big story. Any tips on where they've gone?
Rashog's house? I don't cover the Whitecaps too closely, so I'll have to delve into that. Sounds like a bar down story.
Yeah, no, well, it totally is. I kind of found it, I guess, hey, you know, things are tough when people are stealing your soccer cleats.
No, not at all.
Farhan, always going to catch up with you. I'll say this. So you said the Canucks won't win the lottery. Who do you think does, just for fun?
Edmonton, because why wouldn't they?
Yes.
David and Matthews? I mean, look, if they won it last year, my God, absolutely.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you say that because literally when it comes to, like, nobody's not picking the Hawks to win the Cup. Why wouldn't you pick the Oilers to win the lottery? It makes sense.
It does. It does. And it's funny because, you know, we've had the rebuild discussion so many times on our airwaves in TSN Vancouver. And, you know, people are talking about, you know, Edmonton turning up and whether or not it worked or not. And for me, I think what's happened with the Oilers up until this season has been an epic fail. Like, they have shown you can win the lottery over and over and over and still be terrible and losing the embedded in the culture. And now all of a sudden they got McDavid in a year when they had the fourth best chance to win the lottery. So for the most part, that was a fluke. And it may turn now because all of a sudden McDavid comes, you get a reasonable coach, you get a couple of free agents that all of a sudden give Edmonton a second look where they wouldn't have before. You know, as good as things turned out for Chicago, they still needed Murray and Hossa to sign there. They still needed to get a Patrick Sharp at some point. They still needed other pieces to supplement the guys they drafted. So from Edmonton's perspective, it's going to turn out great because of what happened with McDavid. But that was luck more so than by design, if you understand what I'm saying, in terms of a rebuild process. So it doesn't always work, right? And so there's no guarantee that if the Canucks have to live with this level of pain for as long as Edmonton or Toronto has, that it's going to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, trust me. Yeah. If you're looking at a blueprint on how to do a rebuild, yes, Edmonton is not at the top of the list of how to do one successfully. There's no arguing that. Farhan, always great stuff. Good to catch up with you, man. We'll talk again soon.
Take care, Jason.